please reach out anytime. Thank you so much for listening. Let's make it through this together.
This is Daniela from STEM Champ. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that too. Call our car donation experts at the Center for Car Donations to find out more info, ask questions, and support KBOO. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're talking with Dr. Alexis Unger. We're having Alexis back. It's been about 10 years, I think.
Close to it, I would say.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. It's so great to have you back on KBOO. So let's just jump right into it, Alexis. First of all, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you and what do you do?
Well, I have been working with transgender people for, well, clearly well over a decade. And I specialize in working with anyone anywhere in the world. I started out working locally just with people in Southern California because no one was servicing my particular area. And before I knew it, I had people coming to me from every county. And this was so long ago that they were also asking me, "Will you please talk to my friend online? There's no one in their area who knows anything about this. You're so helpful." And that is what encouraged me to make my YouTube channel. And fast forward, I just opened that up to working with people anywhere in the world. And I stopped counting at 30 countries and working with well over 1,000 people this amount of time in. I'm a little different because my education is different. I have my PhD in human sexuality education, which bridges intersections with gender, sexuality, and your body. A lot of feelings about your body and your gender interplay with sexuality, which is dramatically different from psychology, where there's a lot about psychological testing and focusing on diagnosis and spending years on that. I spent years on gender and how we feel about our bodies. So that's where I really tend to stand out. I also stand out because I absolutely just fell into working with transgender people. I was dating someone and who I thought was my girlfriend. And this is how he came out to me. He said, "So I started tea 3 days ago." And I literally jumped up and down and I clapped my hands.
That's great.
And I said I was going to throw him a party.
And oh, how sweet.
Yes. And he was really afraid to come out to me. But, you know, I'm bisexual. Pansexual is a term that a lot of people have used. I don't know if that word is still being used. Pansexual?
Yeah. Actually, I think there's the... Oh, no, that's poly. There's the poly festival going on in Portland this weekend upcoming. But, I'm not sure. Pansexually, I think that's still being used.
Okay. It evolves, and I'm not working with the younger generations quite as much these days. But anyhow.
So you're, among other... there's a lot to talk about tonight, but I want to start with just letting people know about you. So are you a service provider?
Less so now. I am not a service provider as much, especially since COVID. I have chronic illness, and COVID exacerbated that. And that actually had me pull back from working with transgender people one-on-one in person and in groups. However, that did give me an opportunity to think about how I could scale my knowledge and provide that on a broader scale in a manner that actually allows transgender people to access my knowledge and my experience from their homes anonymously, just like they have and can with my YouTube channel. And that's where I developed my website called Gender Therapy, gendertherapy.com. And my primary masterclass is called Identity Insights. Believe it or not, I didn't put transgender in there because some of the people who work with me can't even use the term. They're not ready for it. Anyhow, it encompasses more than a decade's worth of questions and explanations on, you know, am I transgender? What about this? What about that? Dr. Unger, you can't possibly know after talking to me in this short amount of time. You need to talk to me more. And then helping them decipher that in just such simple terms. I do intend to have it translated into 24 languages. And because it is available worldwide, and because that is my audience. My audience is just everyone anywhere.
Great. So let's kind of go back and do the basics. It's always good to get back to the basics. Say somebody comes to you and they don't know if they're transgender or not. And they say, "Dr. Unger, I think I might be transgender, but I don't know. What should I do?"
Right. So for some people, I have to really energetically feel where they are at. And I want to start where they are at. Ultimately, what are they most comfortable discussing? And with my masterclass, I obviously can't do that. So I start out there with the most gentle information that I can ask, the most basic information, such as something simple like, do you have an alternative name that fits a different gender, even if it's a different spelling of the name that your parents gave you? And so starting out very gentle is really, really good. Then there is looking at just your history of feelings and behaviors, because they differ quite dramatically often from the childhood of a cisgendered individual. And that really is very, very telling. But having someone ask the right questions is really a big deal.
Is there like a scientific test to prove if you're transgender?
No, but I hope to be creating that actual test, kind of like this Kinsey scale, something very simple. I do plan to establish something with just the assessment I've developed and put online. The way it works now is that you get my questions when you go on the course. You get my questions in a written form. You're given an opportunity to write down your answers, think about your answers, and then you get video of me talking to you as though I'm right there with you, giving you what I would say in person. I try to make it very personable and intimate, non-threatening, make it as much of a comfortable and exciting process as possible. It can be as possible, considering that I'm actually not there in person. But so right now there is no measure. There is no test. But
there is a set of diagnostic criteria.
There is diagnostic criteria.
Therapists can use to recommend treatment for gender dysphoria.
Right, which professionals go by. Mm-hmm. And that's for service providers. Unfortunately, there is not a questionnaire or a measure for people to actually use to examine for themselves.
There's no like Facebook test that you can take at home to find out if you're transgender or not.
Right. And then the tests that are out there are, you know, equivalent to those who are old enough know about Cosmo quizzes out of
Cosmo
magazines, right?
That's dating us.
Yes, right.
I was just listening to, an interview with the new editor of Vogue, you know, because...
yes.
Yeah, because, you know, the editor just stepped down after 40 years.
Wow.
She was talking about how, you know, nowadays when we're doing print editions of Vogue, it's kind of like a fashion show. Like,
right.
You know, a fashion show is this really special thing. You know, you do it once a season or something like that, and you take out all your best. And that's kind of how print is becoming for Vogue. Like, everything's moved online.
Yes.
And so now when you get the, 300-page glossy, it's a little pricey, but it's like once every now and then.
Yes.
And
yes.
You kind of treasure it, you know.
Yes.
And maybe the quiz is still in there. I don't know.
Yes.
But yes. I remember the quiz.
Yeah. I remember the quizzes too, right? Well, I've had so many people come to me and say they've taken different quizzes online.
Yeah.
And they just don't measure up beyond the question of if you could press a button, would you change your gender? And that doesn't provide enough deep insight or epiphanies to really hold a person's doubt when the roller coaster swings in that direction, mm-hmm. or when the feelings are not as powerful, because they come in waves. And unfortunately, people don't understand. It's so silly, because this is a very simple way of explaining something, when they say, but the feeling's not with me all the time. And I describe it as like longings or pain or just this presence of either femininity or masculinity, or maybe the absence of either gender in the case of a non-binary individual. I ask very simple questions to make it very, very clear. I ask, are you sad all of the time? Are you tired all of the time? We are an ever-moving state, right? And that's going to influence our ability to access those deeper feelings. And we're going to have life distractions, for example. We're going to have internal pressures that say, I don't want to deal with this right now. There are very valid reasons that those feelings are going to dissipate and go away and then return at a later time. And so we don't need an omnipresence of these cross-gender feelings to be transgender. And for some reason, that's confusing for some people. Until you explain, there is no permanent state we are in outside of breathing, mm-hmm. right? But understanding, you know, you're not happy all the time. You're not tired all the time. These help them to understand, very, very simple explanations help them to understand. And it's above and beyond the question of if you could press a button, would you change your gender? Or when you were little, did you wish you could change your gender when you grew up? And so, like I said, it took me 2 years of just trying to think of every question I faced from any individual. And what I really appreciate about that is that it provides questions from a variety of different religions and ages. And now where it's a little bit less applicable that I had to filter out was obviously generations. I'm old enough to know what a card catalog is, but our young people have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, just these simple things, which when you're on the other side of transition, it's very obvious. It's very obvious. But when you're in a place of still dealing with waves of shame and fear of the unknown, fear of brought onto you by a lot of programming that this is not okay, that you haven't really processed through yet, then it's hard to fight that and find who you are. So there is a period that I find that people just spend hours just ruminating, obsessing, and researching. And unfortunately, in this era, especially in this political climate, there's a lot of false information out there.
Mm. Like, what is some of that? I mean, what's an example of that false information?
Well, for example, anyone can leverage any of your doubt to instill further doubt. So misinformation can be simply someone's own doubt and questioning for themselves. For example, I recently had someone who was introduced to me because they had a brief moment with their insurance window to get a letter for top surgery. But they were using the term dysmorphia instead of dysphoria. And because of this, the professional told them that, and mind you, this is someone who volunteers to work with transgender individuals. This professional told this trans man that he was going to have to work with him for a year to get his letter, which is, for those of us who have been around long enough, know that that was definitely an old standard,
right,
from the standards of care. And it was actually never a standard for top surgery for trans men. That was only a standard applied to trans women. So simply for just using the wrong term. And of course, coming across my path, I explained where he was being taken advantage of, being put through unnecessary hoops because someone wanted to bill insurance, and that he wasn't being properly empowered and educated over what the term dysphoria versus dysmorphia were. And so just teeny tiny things like that can be used against someone. But back to your original question about disinformation. How do you define dysphoria?
How do I define dysphoria?
That, I think, tends to be an individual term for some people. And I've seen so many people argue over what it means online. And I think it's because some people experience it differently from others. But it's not understanding what is the broader definition to mean. And when there is getting down into nuances and teeny tiny details, that's really not the point. That's really not the point. But even just the term dysphoria, what is that? Right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally get your point. Thank you. We're talking with Dr. Alexis Unger, a gender therapist. And that's the name of your website, is that right?
Yeah, my website is gendertherapy.com.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Is it scary? I mean, is it scary for transgender people? I mean, is it, if when you're making that first step, what do you have to do to take that first step?
First step in regards to telling someone, making a phone call to.
Yeah. What is the first step to? What is the first step? I mean, we're kind of here in the beginnings right now. I kind of want to go across the whole gamut in the short hour that we have, but. We're still kind of in the beginning, because I think the beginning is where it all happens.
It is.
And I mean, I am a firm believer, this is just my belief, that the beginning starts when you're born and you kind of know it.
Yes.
I mean, I believe this. No, yes. I don't have any scientific proof that this is true. I don't have like a test or something to show.
Oh, there is plenty of evidence that we are
great.
Born
I'm so glad
trans.
To hear that. Oh, great. I'm so glad to hear
yes.
that. Yeah, because that's just what I've always believed is true.
Yes.
And so, I mean, I think that for most of us, we know
yes.
when we're very little, but you know, when you're actually getting to the point, I mean, where you're asking the questions and you're saying, oh, you know, I think maybe I am transgender.
Right.
But this is really scary. I mean, if I put on a dress, you know, is somebody going to beat me up?
Yes.
You know, am I going to be called and bleep? You know,
yep.
I mean, what does it mean? Am I going to lose my family? You know, why am I even thinking this way? What's wrong with me?
Right.
You know, with that first step, that's just trans femme. I'm not even.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So the first step that applies to all of the people who are really questioning their gender.
I'm afraid.
Yes. Is I'm afraid, but that doesn't mean you're not trans, and it doesn't mean you can't transition, because the very definition of courage is to go forward while experiencing fear. You cannot have courage in the absence of fear. It's a very courageous process. At least the very beginning steps, in my observation, are the ones that require the most courage. So if you're waiting to do this and you're waiting for your fear to go away, that's never going to happen, right? So it's really about like facing that 20 seconds of fear or that 2 minutes of fear, just, you know, before you jump off that high dive, right? There's moment.
I'm going to wait until I get, you know, to retirement age and until my wife passes away, and then I'll do it. You know, I'm going to transition them. I'm going to wait until the kids grow up, you know, so they don't have to deal with that. I'm going to wait because I don't want to put my family through this.
Right. And research shows that the younger kids are when they learn about their loved one, whoever that might be, say an aunt, an uncle, a neighbor, or a parent, the better off they are. Because you have to remember, when they're super, super young, they believe in, you know, the Easter Bunny, you know, they believe in anything magical, and people are confused about how much detail they have to go into. And that's where they trip themselves. You know, you don't only answer the question that the kids themselves have. And the sooner you can do things in a state of your own readiness is very critical. And that readiness, it's like essentially being outed. If you're not ready, it's definitely going to put you on a roller coaster that you're not mentally, emotionally ready for. It doesn't mean that you won't succeed. I've had people get caught with articles of clothing found in the laundry and have to explain. And that's how they're found out. And in the end, they're grateful that there was a catalyst to move them forward. But waiting for some event in someone's life or someone to get to a certain age actually doesn't mean that they can't take steps.
Or, you know, I mean, it must be a fetish. There's something sick about me. It must just be some kind of weird fetish. Why do I want to wear women's clothing? You know, what's this about? I mean, am I gay? I must be gay. No, I'm not.
Right.
What's going on?
Right, the circles of going around.
Yeah.
And you actually bring up something there that's actually absolutely critical. And that is the sexual component around questioning your gender. Because there is, for some people, some arousal that comes with experiencing themselves as themselves. So, for example, dressing in women's clothing or men's clothing, trans men wearing packers and finding that they're very, very aroused. Perhaps they enjoy pegging more than they expected to. That's their way into this.
Everybody should enjoy pegging.
Right? Thank you.
Yes.
So, but that can make someone confused, where it's just like, oh, is this a kink? Is this a sexual thing? Or is there something more? And that's where I've never really been able to go deeper in my YouTube channel. And I think that's where a lot of people really get wrapped up and confused. And our culture, our Western culture, is highly puritanistic and doesn't really make open conversation on sexuality okay. But here's the other challenge. You know, how many courses on sexuality does the average mental health professional get while they're in their degree?
I don't know.
I took that. Okay. I have my master's in social work from USC. I have my master's in education as well. I actually use both, really, more my master's in education. I really think that that's what people pick up in my videos so much, is like, why do I understand her so easily? It's all of the tools come together. Unfortunately, we only educate our counseling professionals, our psychologists, even mostly our medical community and our psychiatrists, very, very little. You know what they learn? Freud,
yeah.
Because he provided a psychological theory, and he became famous because he talked about sex when no one else did.
Yeah.
And sex sells.
Yeah.
Is Freud's theories helpful?
You know, I like interpretation of dreams.
I love that too. But that's not always helpful when you're questioning your gender.
Yeah, definitely not. I would not go to Freud to talk about my gender identity, no.
Yes. Yes. And so this is actually where I've actually been called in to do trainings for medical students at medical schools.
I don't think I would go to Jung either.
So at least there's some.
I might go to Clarissa Pinkola Estes. I'll start with her.
Yeah. So, but it is very important that we can address the sexual component, and actually from someone like myself, a PhD in human sexuality education, a reliable source on this topic, to be addressing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've worked with, we're talking today with Dr. Alexis Unger, a gender therapist, and you have the site gendertherapy.com. What will people see when they go to your site? I mean, what are they going to find?
Right now, I am just launching my master project, which is helping people understand whether or not they are transgender. But I do have a lot of expansion. I intend to bring some master courses on social anxiety and bridging out into becoming a more social individual, because I notice that is an area where some people tend to struggle, at least initially. You know, they love being themselves, going out at them as themselves, but making that next step into living the life that they always dreamed can sometimes be a little bit of a hurdle. I am also going to have a number of, honestly, free or by donation, really critical conversations I have with people. For example, what is the standard opening statements and questions I ask when someone is depressed or having anxiety? Because I think that information needs to be available really to anyone. I intend on opening a community for really anyone who's, especially at the beginning of transitioning, because there are so many specific questions. You know, people coming out as parents to different age children, people coming out in different religious communities, different industries, and to have a community where you can ask those questions and get answers. I, in that community, also have a number of surgeons and medical professionals that I've interviewed, where they can ask through me specific questions about, you know, starting hormones. Sometimes very specific, sometimes very generic, like, can I start hormones if I've had an organ transplant? How is that affected? Up to and just, you know, what changes are going to come first? I'm not sure I'm ready to have them show, but I desperately want to start them. So I'm trying to provide as many, I don't want to say obstacles, but as many challenges I've witnessed my clients over my professional history face. I want to have those answers all in one place so that should they want to get started, they have right there what they need. Questions about hormones, questions about coming out, periods of, you know, those lows, because they happen, less and less so post-transition usually, and, you know, waves of anxiety when you're about to make a big step. And so having that available.
So let's talk religion for a minute since you brought that up. So let's say that I am a religion, whatever the religion is, mm-hmm. Muslim, Christian, mm-hmm. Mormon, mm-hmm. conservative, Jewish. And I say, you know, taking hormones, changing your body, it's against the Bible, against the Quran, against the Torah. You know, women can't be men, men can't be women. That's what it says in the sacred texts. What do you say?
I am the best person to ask this question.
Oh, great. Okay, great. Okay,
okay, so I have to remind people, again, as a sexuality professional, that I do have a very different lens. And I would say, okay, how are we defining your gender? Are we defining your gender as your genitals, your chromosomes, or your neuroanatomy, your brain structures? Because if we want to zero in just on genitals, what gender are those people who are born intersex? People are born with potentially a penis and a vagina at the same time. Okay, what does your holy book have to say about those people?
Actually, the Talmud does address that just a little bit.
Okay, right?
But as far as, I don't know about the other religions.
Well, they mention there's a mention of eunuchs, there's and different things.
No, the Talmud does address intersex conditions.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. I'm glad that someone paid attention. Well,
not much, though.
So eunuchs is
but there's eunuchs too, yeah.
But those are man-made. Those are someone who actually had a surgery on their genitalia.
Yeah, I guess so.
And did they volunteer for that or were they put through that? We don't know. So there's a lot of nuanced questions to ask here, right?
Yeah.
In depth a little bit more.
Yeah, I hate the eunuch discussion because, like, the eunuch discussion doesn't really capture the subtlety of what it actually means to be trans female.
Oh, no, yeah. not remotely, because eunuch was actually created for castrati.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole point was them to be performers in theater to have a higher pitched voice.
But, I mean, when I'm talking to Christians, that comes up a lot. I'm just like, no, we're not, you know.
Unfortunately, you're facing groupthink in that scenario. And you can't change groupthink in a moment. But it is something to help them think past sixth grade biology.
Right.
To ask them, what is someone's gender if they are born with genitals that cannot be easily categorized in the two categories that Western culture has? What are we going to designate as someone's gender when their chromosomes also don't align that way?
Yeah.
Because there is one that is consistent, and that is our neuroanatomy, which is where our gender identity comes from. That's what's consistent. But, you know, we're in the era
in the brain.
It's in the brain, exactly. Oh, okay. It's called the sexually dimorphic nucleus.
Oh.
Yeah, we've got a name for it and everything.
I didn't even know
that. It's 2.2 times larger. And those who identify as male.
Hmm.
Identify meaning cis and trans. Uh-huh. It aligns excellent. Now, they are studying the binary right now. People ask, well, what about non-binary? And I just say researchers are not there yet. But if you can have chromosomes that don't fit into boxes, and you can have genitalia that doesn't fit into boxes, and also gonads that don't fit into boxes, you can have two ovaries and an undescended testicle.
Yeah.
And so those are the kind of questions that I do like to ask for people who are religious. You explain. No, I'm not going to answer. You explain your holy book to me.
Right.
How does it explain and care for these individuals who have existed across time and on every continent where there's human life?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one to be debated.
Well, let's move on a little bit, because there's so much ground to cover here.
Right. Yes.
I mean, with if you've gotten to a point where you've sort of been, you're ready to take the first steps, then what are the first steps for somebody who's transgender? I mean, what do you do once you're ready? Like, you've gotten over some of your fear, your anxiety. I mean, I know that there's lots of places you can go online, but I mean, people sometimes just need to hear too. Like, I mean, what do I do? Do I just go down to the doctor, or I mean, how does it work?
Right. So I ask really what makes sense to you, because yeah. Transition is social, it's physical, it's psychological, and it's romantic. And so when I break it down into those categories.
Can you say those again? What are the categories?
The categories. Okay. These are just Dr. Unger's categories.
Okay, great.
Okay. So they are social. That involves coming out, presenting as yourself. Then there is physical. And that would mean anything that perhaps you want to change in your body. And that doesn't necessarily have to be even hormones or surgeries. Yeah, that could be.
Like, my nails are a mess. They're such a mess.
Very good. Yes, nails, haircut, you know, just in anything.
And my roots. Oh my God, you can see my roots.
Oh, well, you look fantastic. No. You have a Burning Man glow, so don't even worry about it.
Okay.
Then there's psychological, which is the first transition that people actually go through that they don't realize.
Oh.
It's telling themselves first, accepting that in themselves.
Right.
Because they know when they're younger, but they're programmed out of that understanding of themselves.
Wow.
And it's about coming back around and coming home to yourself and telling yourself that truth.
God, I love that.
Right. Yeah. And then the last one, which not everyone faces, is the romantic, because that home relationship, particularly if you're married, makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. It can change things.
Right.
Yeah.
So I usually ask people, what makes sense for you? What would you like to do in a dream world?
Uh-huh.
Because that's your easiest step. So why don't we start with your easiest step?
Oh, sure. Okay, great. I love that.
Right?
So
And so sometimes it's like, well, I've been hinting at my best friend. Well, let's stop the hints.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's a social step.
Yeah.
Right? Or I've been researching this clinic around the corner. Well, that's your obvious move. It's just you're telling yourself.
Yeah.
You just need someone in your life to remind you that it's okay to tell yourself yes. And the reason for that is your entire life you've been told no. Down to the color of the sheets on your bed, the kind of shoes you put on your feet.
Oh, sure.
Every day of your life. You get thousands of gendered messages. So, per day.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So, to overcome that takes some time.
Right.
And it's okay for it to take some time. But that first step, just examine your life and ask, okay, what do I want? What have I been, like, pondering or researching, and does that step seem accessible? If someone came to me right now and said, hey, I'll go do it with you.
Oh, wow.
Would you do it?
Sure.
Right?
Right.
Right. And sometimes there's just that spark. Yeah, I would. There you go.
Oh, wow.
That's your step.
Great.
That's your step.
So it helps to, what makes it like, What are some tricks? Like, I mean, like you just mentioned a friend.
Yes.
Like having some support, right?
Yes.
So that's one trick.
Yes.
It's not a trick, but it's just, like, what are some of the tools? I don't want to sound overly complicated. I mean, what helps?
Okay. Well, a simplified way of doing this, and this is something that I actually encourage people in a number of different ways where they're experiencing barriers. If someone you love was there, and you had to do it for them, could you find the space and capacity within yourself to do it?
Of course.
Right.
Sure.
Suddenly it's doable.
I would do anything for someone I love.
Right. And what if that person said, okay, I need you to come home to yourself and come forward in your truth. Let's have true intimacy and be our authentic selves. And that's what they were hoping for would come out of you. And that you actually want that from them in return. Right. that would be true intimacy. Okay, now knowing that they are asking that from you, and you're doing it for them, not just for yourself, suddenly things seem easier.
That's great. I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems like it really helps. Can you think of anything else people could do, you know? I mean, just to make it easier?
Without having a specific person in front of me. Give me a minute. Right.
So, I mean, this is like asking a loved one to be there for you and to be supportive.
Right, but only mentally.
Only mentally.
Only mentally. That right. If I have them by my side, invisibly asking me to do this, could I suddenly find the strength within myself to do it?
Yeah.
Suddenly you can.
Now, what about, so of those areas, I just want to stay there for just a minute. The social seems like the hardest one, but is it? Which one's the hardest?
You know what?
It seems like social would be the hardest.
Yes and no, because it depends on what is accessible.
Yeah.
And usually it's what is the least accessible for that individual is actually the hardest.
Yeah.
Because some people have the ability to find hormones, you know, for example, perhaps DIY, and suddenly that seems very easy because it's right there within reach. Now, for the community, for the individuals where hormones is nowhere to be found, suddenly social looks fairly doable.
People can't access hormones? teenagers can't access hormones right now.
It's a person-by-person situation. Yeah. And I think that we can't even blatantly say that the culture that you live in a more... Perhaps.
Even if you live in a state where it's legal, yes, it's still hard.
It is still hard.
You know, because you still, yeah. I mean, I come from a time when, like, it was really hard to get them because I'm that old. And, like, there were just other ways to get them. There were ways for people to get hormones. And, you know, most of us knew someone who got their hormones that way.
Yes.
And now it's easy. I mean, but it's about to become hard again.
Yes.
So, but hormones are a big deal, right?
Right.
I mean, especially for trans men. I mean, well, for everyone, trans women too.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
That just makes such a difference, doesn't it?
It does, especially because the psychological effects of hormones themselves, the peace and serenity that can come over someone once their levels are right is just transformative.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah. I can testify that from personal experience from being on hormones for most of my later adult life. It's so nice.
Yes. I've had people say it's like going from trying to travel, and this is for people who drive perhaps a manual stick shift vehicle, from being in the wrong gear to being in the right gear.
Oh, that's good.
Other people describe it as from living in black and white to living in color.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. Yeah, I like that
one. Yeah, and you really just don't know until you're on the other side of that experience.
Right.
And so when you have the right, again, neurochemistry that aligns with your neuroanatomy, of course the whole system's going to run smoothly.
Yeah.
And that can make your transition a lot easier.
Right.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, to me, having the right hormones, it feels like, you know, like when you're lucid dreaming and you're flying?
Yes.
Like, that's what it feels like to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Weightless. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's good.
Because there is a huge weight on you.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, to live basically in a self that doesn't belong to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's a nice feeling. Great. Well, let's cover one more part. I mean, we're not going to get to the whole thing tonight, but so let's say that you've made those choices and you're ready to go. You've sort of got things lined up. So what are the steps that you have to take to successfully trend, how do you know what your level is? I mean, where do you go with this once you've gotten to the point where you're ready to do the things that you need to do? Like, how do you know? I mean, should you have surgery? Should you just be happy with, taking hormones? Where do you go with this?
My rule of thumb, first and foremost.
Do you need to get divorced? I mean, what do you do?
Well, see, and this is really unfortunate, especially on the divorce issue. I have so many mental health professionals who've said, well, your wife isn't gay or what have you, so you're obviously going to have to get a divorce. And that is so far from the truth. So setting that aside, my first rule of thumb is you do not transition to play the role of the gender you're stepping into. You transition to be yourself. So that means that if you don't want a surgery, you don't have it. Right? If you want to be a trans woman with short hair, that's how you style it. If you are a trans man with long hair, that's how you wear it. Right? The whole point is to go from being forced into a role that you had no choice in playing from the moment of your birth to being yourself, whatever that self is like, right? And when we're honest, we can look at all kinds of expressions and examples of gender out there. Are there women with short hair? Yes, so you'd fit in. Are there men with long hair? Yes, so you fit in just fine. It's all fine. You go into being yourself. So that's my first rule. And that includes not having any loved one or professional convince you that you have to do something that in your heart, you know, isn't something you want.
So, Dr. Alexis, we have a few minutes left. I mean, first of all, what haven't we gotten to tonight talking about the transgender experience and gender therapy and the kind of services that you offer? What are some of the things that we haven't talked about tonight that we should still make sure to get into the show?
It's so interesting. I really appreciate you offering to give me these last few minutes to, you know, promote what I have to offer, when really I would just like to spend just one or two more minutes to give a message to your listeners.
Oh, please.
Okay. Whatever, if you're just starting, whatever you're afraid of is usually much bigger than what reality will provide for you. You know, one of the questions I ask when people are about to socially transition and they're full of fear and full of shame, and, you know, I ask them, okay, well, what do you think is going to happen? And I'll say, well, do you think every single one of your friends is not going to accept you? Well, no. Okay, well, then let's stop thinking in those extremes. So just letting people know that it's going to be significantly better than your mind will tell you in the beginning. But on the other side, it's way better than you ever dreamed. Way better than you could ever imagine. So that's actually what I really want people to know. Don't let your fear run away with you.
Yeah. You've been doing this for a while now. Why did you get into this? Let's talk about you for a minute. Why did you get into this work?
It's really interesting because while I look on the outside like I fit very well into a feminine role. I have conventional standards of beauty privilege. I have a lot of, you know, passing and privilege in all kinds of ways. If you get to know me, I don't fit in.
Oh, okay.
I always wanted to play men's sports, but this body meant that it came with a problem. And that was, unfortunately, men tending to prey on me this body. And so I wouldn't be able to play on the football team, which I wanted to do in high school. I chose not to be on the wrestling team, which I really wanted to do, but I was having enough problems without giving men the opportunity to grope me on a mat. So I actually had the opportunity to later actually play women's tackle football semi-pro.
Oh, great. How was that?
It was incredible. It was better than I ever could have imagined.
Ooh, all right.
Yes, definitely dream experiences. But I'm the person who I I'm going to go and I'm going to use my power tools to take care of that project you've been putting off. So what I look on the like on the outside behaviorally is very different. The way I know I'm not trans is that I'm good with my body how it is. I have that privilege. But at the same time, when I was an adolescent and coming into adolescence, I hated my body. I hated it. I blamed it for all of the unwanted attention I was getting. Unwanted, unfortunately, predatory attention I was getting. So I hated the fact that I got breasts and curves. So I can really relate to the trans experience in some ways. Sure. In some ways. I mean, I obviously am cisgender, so I have massive privilege. But in some ways, I think I get it because of that. And I think another reason why I ended up here, it's something that I can't seem to ignore. My best friend growing up was a trans man.
Oh, well, there you go.
There I go, right?
Right.
And then I have dated multiple people. I don't know how. I must be a magnet of some sort. But multiple people in the closet to themselves before they met me, where we're just having a few conversations where it's like, I observe these behaviors in you.
Oh, yeah.
They don't know what I do.
Right.
Right? And it turns out that they are trans.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I've just over and over have just come across this in different segments of my life.
So who's better in bed, trans men or trans women?
I think I can get into big trouble picking a team
here. Sorry, look at that question. Let's just move on.
Can I ask you? Oh, you're bringing back fun memories, though.
Is the we have a few, we just have a little bit of time left. Is the experience the same for trans men and trans women? I mean, is it the same experience or is it a different kind of transgender experience for trans men and trans women?
Well, let me talk about that on different realms, okay. Different planes. Okay. So for example, both trans men and trans women agree that orgasms on estrogen are better. But trans men tend to not complain about that because the orgasms come so much easier. So that experience is different. In some ways, there is a benefit for trans women with the availability of surgeries where they can feel like their body is right. For example, we haven't really created a process of a phalloplasty that is as operational for sex and urinating as really we would like, not at least to the degree for trans women. However, you know, the social transition for trans men is significantly different because they're not facing misogyny and social.
And Tia is so amazing. I mean,
yeah,
I've never met a trans man yet who wasn't taking Tia for a while. And it's like the transformation is just, it's really kind of unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, it makes, yes. I mean, I think it just shows that like female is kind of the default of our species, you know, in terms of the, whatever that word is, the scientific word.
Well, that's actually true.
Yeah.
We all start out as female, right, in utero, and that's actually our brains. What's required is testosterone to masculinize the sexually dimorphic nucleus.
Right.
In the final trimester of pregnancy. Yeah. So you're exactly right.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so amazing to see what T does for trans men.
Yes.
So that's nice.
Yes. So, you know, you look at these different realms and planes, you know, the experiences are dramatically different, but the one thing that is similar and the same, I would say, is that for the most part, everyone feels better. Studies show that going on hormones mentally, emotionally improves any kind of struggle, anxiety, depression, even ADHD improves. It doesn't make it go away, of course, you know, but it improves. And, you know, 98.5% of people who get bottom surgery are glad they did.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can't even get LASIK eye surgery and get those kinds of numbers.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Right?
Oh, that's great. That's
right.
Really great.
There are so many surgeries out there that don't have those numbers.
Yeah. No, that's great. You should, like...
I will.
That's yeah, great. Do that.
I will. I'm going to have a whole list of the statistical regret on all of the different surgeries out there just to let folks know, you know, what your confidence rate is. And, you know, I will be making, obviously, all of my questions that I ask people when they're trying to decide, do I want surgery? Should I have surgery? Just I'll make those available as well.
Oh, great. Yeah, you're such a great advocate. I mean, you're very positive, so that's really nice. Yeah. But you're also very knowledgeable.
I think those two go together.
Yeah.
It's easy to be positive with all this knowledge.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, don't lose it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take care of that brain because we really need that.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
So if people go to your site, what else can they do?
Right now, that's I have waiting lists for some of the things I described that will be available, and so they can sign up for waiting lists so that those do become available. Obviously, they can follow social media, gender.therapy on Instagram and my YouTube channel.
So that's where people can reach you if they want to get more information.
Yes.
You know, kind of go on that exploration.
Right.
And that's like a place to go.
Right. And I am using my social media to give all of these tidbits of knowledge and information a little at a time out there, a little bit of support, a little bit of positivity, a little bit of just how do we talk to people who don't understand this and perhaps are resistant to understanding, you know?
Dr. Alexis, so what else is going on in your life? You know, kind of close out the show. Give us a sense of, you know, who are you when you're not being Dr. Alexis?
My first love is animals.
Animals.
Yes. And my entire life I've ridden horses.
Oh, horses. Yes.
And I have elected to be child free.
Child free.
Surgically elected to be child free.
Huh.
Because they would take time away from my horses, dogs, and animals.
Horses and dogs, yeah. Well, Dr. Alexis Unger, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today on Transpositive. One more time, if people want to check out your website and learn a little bit more about what you do, where can they go?
Gendertherapy.com is where you're going to have everything that I've discussed today. And like I said, if I haven't published it yet, you should find a waiting list that you can sign up for so you're notified. I do not spam. I do not share. I do not sell.
Dr. Alexis Unger, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us today on Transpositive.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks,
McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your co-workers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing forward discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive here at KBOO. At KBOO, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KBOO want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KBOO supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise. They call it climbing and I call it visibility. They call it coolness and I call it visibility. They call it way too rowdy. I call it finally free.
Hi, I'm Michael Van Cleek. I'm tapped into the vibe and the rhythm of the river of the city of Portland, and you are too, because you're listening to KBOO Portland.